Hear ye, hear ye, hear ye. The Supreme Court of the State of South Dakota, the Honorable David Gilbertson presiding, is now open for the transaction of any business that may legally come before us.
Good morning. The first case for oral argument this morning is American Bank and Trust and South Dakota Wheat Growers versus Nathan Shaw et al., FinAg and AgStar. For the appellants will be Roger Damgard and Susan Sabers, attorneys from Sioux Falls, representing AgStar, is that correct? All right. And, all right, thank you. You're Mr. Croft?
Yes, sir.
All right, thank you. Welcome to South Dakota.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Hardest part of this job is getting everybody in the right order. All right, and then for the Appley American Bank and Trust, we have Mr. Brent Wilbur, an attorney from Pierre, who will be arguing first. Is that correct, Mr. Wilbur?
That's correct, Your Honor.
All right, and then Mr. Robert M. Nash, an attorney representing FinAg, who will be speaking for 6 minutes, Mr. Nash being from Rapid City, correct, sir? All right. Then Mr. Cross, you may proceed. Oh, before you do, the court should note that there have been two disqualifications in this matter, and Justice Sabers and Justice Zinner have disqualified themselves. The court has appointed the Honorable Tim Johns, an attorney from, or a judge from the Fourth Circuit, to sit in place of Justice Sabers, and has appointed the Honorable Thomas Trimble, the presiding judge from the Seventh Circuit, to sit in place of Justice Zinner. With that, you may proceed, Mr. Cross.
May it please the court and opposing counsel, my name is Dustin Frost and I represent Feldman Brothers as well as AgStar Financial Services regarding the appeal of the court's, the Sixth Circuit court's decision and judgment of October 1, 2002, awarding claim and delivery of approximately 910 bred cows to American Bank and Trust in this matter. This case presents a number of important issues which have been addressed in recent years by this court, as well as the interaction between Article 9, as enacted by the South Dakota Legislature, and a bailment situation in which a party custom feeds cattle with another custom feeder. In this case, the facts and evidence we believe show undisputably that Feldman Brothers paid fair market value for approximately 1,500 head of bred cows. Those 1,500 head of bred cows were delivered to Mr. Shaw in the Highmore area between December of 2000 and March of 2000, or I'm sorry, December of 2001. Those 1,536 bred cows were the subject of a bred cow agreement that was entered into between Feldman Brothers and Mr. Shaw, which specify the terms of the custom feeding arrangement. It is important to note for the court's benefit that there is undisputed evidence, both as it relates to the terms of the bred cow agreement itself and from the testimony of the parties to that agreement, that Mr. Shaw at no time had any ownership interest in those cows. He did not have the right to dispose of those cows. He did not have the right to encumber those cows. He was paid a specified rate of yardage. He was paid a specified feedlot cost when they were on a feedlot, specified pasture cost. He was paid for the costs that he advanced, but those costs were all contemporaneously paid for by Feldman Brothers, and that's a very significant point. This case arises because of the collapse of the Shaw operation in April of 2002. At that time, Mr. Shaw had entered into a lending relationship with both FinAg and with the American Bank. As it relates to the American Bank, in June of 2001, they had essentially refinanced Mr. Shaw's other cow operation. Prior to 1999, Mr. Shaw had had a relationship by which he custom fed cows for FinAg. After passage of Amendment E, FinAg discontinued what it referred to as its value-added program and sold the cows to Mr. Shaw and retained a security interest. At that time, there were approximately 1,000 to 1,100 cows that Mr. Shaw had. All of those cows either had or should have had FinAg ear tags identifying them as FinAg cows. In the early part of 2001, Mr. Shaw approached FinAg and requested to expand his feeder cattle operation and asked for additional financing for that. Because he was against his lending limit, FinAg advised him that he needed to find alternative financing for his bred cow agreement. He then approached the American Bank and requested additional financing. Now, the key provision here, Your Honor, is that on June 5, 2001, two representatives of American Bank go out with Mr. Shaw. They go out to an unidentified pasture. They look at some cows. The representatives ask Mr. Shaw, are those the cows that are the FinAg cows? He says, yes. The bank representatives say, how many cows? He says, about 600. They go to a second pasture. Same thing. Are those the cows? Yes, they are. How many cows? 400 cows. So they dutifully write down on their report that there are 1,000 cows that are FinAg cows that can now be refinanced by American Bank. American Bank does do a UCC-1 search, and that search does not reveal any filing by my client, Feldman Brothers. The key issues raised in this case are whether or not a bailment standing in and of itself is sufficient right of the debtor to encumber that interest. In this particular case, we believe that the case law clearly shows that a bailment exists such that Feldman Brothers is the owner and was not required to file a UCC. Now, there are a couple of propositions that this court has already announced in the various cases that we believe govern this case and I think are undisputed. The first being that a debtor can only grant a security interest if that debtor has rights in the collateral. That's right out of 57A9203. The second proposition is that mere possession, standing alone, is not sufficient rights in the collateral to grant a security interest. That proposition does not appear to be disputed. The third proposition is a bailment situation is not sufficient interest to grant a security interest in the bailee's possessory right to a third party, in this case to American Bank. That proposition has been adopted by this court. It was held by the Eighth Circuit applying South Dakota law in the Robeter case back in the mid-1980s.
Is a determination of a bailment, is that a finding of fact, a conclusion of law, or mixed?
We believe that it is a finding or conclusion of law, Your Honor. We did have some dispute relative to what the conclusions of law versus findings of fact were between the trial court and we objected to certain characterizations of things as findings of fact. But the important point, Your Honor, is he made no finding on that issue.
He made no finding on a bailment.
He made no finding on that issue. The court, the trial court.
Did you
court,
propose findings?
We objected to the proposed. The trial court at the conclusion of the trial on September 6th asked Mr. Wilbur on behalf of the bank, announced his preliminary decision orally, asked Mr. Wilbur to submit findings. We objected to those findings, and those objections are of record.
Right.
So he was not clear as to the ownership interest or what interest Feldman Brothers had in these cattle. This is a classic bailment situation. Now, what the appellees are arguing or have said is two things. First of all, these were really farm products. Of the 1,536 head of cattle that Feldman Brothers had purchased, approximately 900 of them had come from HS Cattle, which was a trade name of Mr. Shaw. As to those cattle, the court concluded as a finding of fact or a mixed finding of fact and law, it was found both in the findings and in the conclusions of law, that those were farm products, not inventory. Now, it's important to note that Mr. Shaw wore many hats out in Highmore, South Dakota. He owned the Highmore Auction Sale Barn. He was a cattle broker. He bought and sold cattle to people in the ordinary course of his business. He also did have his own herd, but that own herd was the FinAg herd. Now, the facts are very clear, and the record, we believe, is very clear, that herd, the FinAg herd, did not represent any of the purchases that Mr. Feldman made from HS Cattle Sales. We have presented and filed with the trial court a clear documentary record which shows a clear chain of title flowing from Mr. Shaw making contemporaneous purchases when he was selling to the Feldman Brothers from HS Cattle directly to Feldman Brothers. And those were not coming out of that FinAg herd.
The key point or the key issue in this case is whether or not Feldman Brothers was negligent or somehow was responsible for not having filed a custodial financing statement. Now, it's undisputed that there was no custodial financing statement, but the important point, Your Honors, is whether or not that is mandated by law. And if the trial court's holding is allowed to stand, what we will have in the state of South Dakota, in everything but name, is the requirement that possession in and of itself is sufficient to grant a security interest in the collateral which is in the possession of that party. Now, that is...
Well, it's not quite that broad. I mean, you've still got UCC financing statements. You've got various documents that can be drawn to clarify the positions of the parties, whether it's a bailment, a sharecrop arrangement, or whatever. So, aren't you... pushing the envelope a little too far as to the consequences
well,
of affirming
Your Honor,
the trial
court. I understand your point, and that's why I say in all but name, because if we hold that in this case a financing statement or a UCC custodial statement is required to be filed, then there are little to no circumstances where possession is not sufficient indicia of ownership and apparent control such that the financing statement has to be filed. Now that would
be unique circumstances here, though. I mean, if I recall, wasn't your client, Feldman Brothers, weren't they in a profit-sharing arrangement with Shaw, too, on this, which is a little bit different than the usual feeder operation, isn't it?
As the Eighth Circuit noted in Rowheeder, in fact, this sharing arrangement is quite common, and it does not take it out of a bailment arrangement. And the point is, Your Honor, that all of the upfront money, all the purchase money for the cows was paid for by Feldman. Feldman was responsible and did pay for the feed bill, the vet bill, all of the incidental costs of keeping and holding these cattle. Now, the bank was not paying any of those costs, and they weren't fronting those costs, so that we're not being held out as if Shaw owns these cows, so therefore we're financing or fronting that portion of the cost.
Shaw was somehow able to show the new lenders that he had some. I mean, he had income tax records and other things that he presented to them. Maybe they were false, but somehow he was able to show to them that he had a possessory interest. And wouldn't the profit-sharing part of that be an indication of some possessory or some interest?
We believe, Your Honor, and I think it's fair to say that that actually confuses two distinct issues. And the distinct issues are this. On the one hand, the claim is that you Feldman Brothers allowed Mr. Shaw sufficient apparent control and ownership to hold yourself out as the owner to the world, such that you better put the world on notice, or you're going to have the risk of having your rights subrogated to that of a third party, such as American Bank. When we talk about the Bread Cow Agreement, Your Honor, that isn't part of that analysis, because that Bread Cow Agreement, as American Bank has said repeatedly, we knew nothing about that Bread Cow Agreement. That wasn't filed. It wasn't held out to the world. You weren't giving that to us to show what interest you have in the collateral. The one issue, the apparent control and ownership, is an estoppel issue. It is saying to Mr. Feldman and Feldman Brothers, you are precluded from asserting your true title and your true ownership interest because you didn't do something or you allowed Shaw to do that which you should not have done. Now, if we look at the cases, if we look at the Temple case, which on first blush seems to be very closely on point to this particular case, but we look at that case closely, the difference is in that case it was a father-son, Doug and Merle Temple. Father buys cattle, the original herd that he buys, the cows that he buys, he has his own brand placed on those cows, puts them out on his son's pasture. Son is allowed to control them, to dispose of them, to cull them, to do whatever he wants with them. Subsequent to that, father buys additional cows. Those cows, however, he does not put his brand on. He puts his son Merle's brand. And the court correctly pointed out that in South Dakota, a brand is prima facie indication of ownership. So he was telling the world, my son owns these cows. He did something to allow the world to think that he, his son, owned those cows. In this case, other than doing a custom feeding operation, Mr. Feldman did nothing to allow that presumption to occur. Now, whether or not Mr. Shaw was successfully able to convince the bank that those cows were his is a different question. Because at the end of the day, Your Honor, the bank has repeatedly said, we did everything a prudent lender could do. What did they do? They checked the UCC records, and they drove out with Mr. Shaw and looked at some cows. They don't know where. They don't know which cows. To this day, it is not reasonable, and there is no basis in the record to say that those cows were the Feldman Brothers' cows, that those cows were Ron Jennings' cows, that those cows were Nathan Shaw's cows that were previously the Fine Egg cows, or that they were no one's cows.
Was there inventory? Did Shaw keep any inventory? Were there ear tags on any of the Feldman cattle?
Yes, there are many identifying marks on the Feldman cattle. I mean, if we go through the brand inspector's report, Your Honor, we will see that of the 910 cows, I think that it's fair to say that we can very easily trace 571 of them definitely back to purchases that Feldman made. Of the Fine Egg herd, the herd that the bank was attempting to refinance, there are only 82 ear tags that have Fine Egg ear tags on them.
But the Feldman cattle did have ear tags, and there was
not just ear tags, various brands ear tags, and these were a number of deliveries, Your Honor. But we have the invoices.
Did the bank see this inventory?
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
Well, we don't know what they saw, and that's the key point here, Your Honor. Again, I get back to the trial court found that the bank did everything a reasonably prudent lender did, but as Amicus points out, and as I think is fundamental, the most fundamental point that a prudent lender should do is verify that you actually own what you say you do own. And they never did that. They never did any verification to prove that Mr. Shaw actually had an interest in the cows that he was showing them. They never asked for purchases. They never asked for invoices or purchase agreements or anything to prove. The only thing they verified was what security interests were out there. But as Amicus points out, that's the equivalent of Mr. Shaw going outside of his auction sale barn and telling the bank officer, here's 500 cars. I want $50,000 for the 500 cars. And they go and they check the records and they see that there's no security interest or no claim of any right of anyone to cars from Mr. Shaw. So they give him the money. They never check to see if he actually owns the cars in the first place. And that's the primary point here, Your Honor, is that if you say that merely placing cows, a custom feeding operation, with a third party here in South Dakota, vests that person with sufficient indicia of ownership so that he can encumber them, you have, I think, announced a bellwether change in the law that, as Amicus points out, would be contrary to the custom and practice of cattlemen in this state for over 100 years. And what we have then is a situation where these custom feeders, even though they have the ownership interest, even though it is a bailment, even though 9505 specifically says that a bailor or a lessor is not obligated to file a custodial financing statement, they may do so, but they are not required to do so. And even in those situations, you must do so or you will be secondary to the bank. Now that is not the law. The law is that a debtor ordinarily can only give that which he has. In other words, we talk about the profit-sharing arrangement. Now, in point of fact, with that profit-sharing arrangement and this 11% repayment, it was not a repayment to Mr. Shaw. There has been a great deal made about the fact that the bread cow agreement, after providing for costs, says that those costs will be repaid to Feldman Brothers upon the disposition of the herd at 11% interest. That was not a money that was paid to Mr. Shaw. That was simply a means for determining what the, quote, net profits were for the profit-sharing arrangement that would occur at the end of the arrangement. Now, if the argument is that interest, whatever it be, of Mr. Shaw, and we believe it's minimal, and in this case, zero, that there was no profit, he could encumber that. Whatever his minimal profit-sharing interest was, he was certainly free to encumber that. But that does not give, just because he has some interest, however minimal, that does not open the floodgates to encumbering the entirety of those bred cows. Feldman Brothers clearly show that they were paying contemporaneous value for these cows. They were paying for the upkeep. They were paying for the yardage, the feed costs, the vet bills. All of those costs were being paid by Feldman Brothers.
If that is the case, why did not the trial court make a finding on ownership?
We specifically raised that issue, Your Honor. We argued it in closing arguments. When the proposed findings were made, we objected.
So the trial court made no finding one way or the other? Who owned the cattle?
The trial court made the determination that that Feldman Brothers was, in essence, an unsecured creditor, without explicitly ever saying, as best as I can recall, who owned the cattle.
So the trial court never reached this bailment, never made a decision on the bailment issue?
Not that I can recall, Your Honor. It essentially said that, for all intents and purposes, the apparent ownership, that Feldman Brothers, by placing the cattle and not filing the custodial financing statement, vests sufficient indicia of ownership with Mr. Shaw such that Mr. Shaw could encumber the cattle.
What relief, then, are you seeking from this court? A remand for more findings in the bailment issue, or do you think you should win outright, or where do you want to go with your argument?
Thank you, Your Honor. We believe that the record has been made abundantly clear as far as the tracing goes. Relative to the 910 cows, and this gets a little more detailed, we had asked the trial court to at least issue those findings that are undisputed for the purpose of at least making a clear appellate record, even if it disagreed that they were insignificant as far as the tracing goes. But we believe that that tracing is uncontroverted. And under that tracing, we believe that at most the interest of Fine Ag and American Bank would be the 82 ear tag Fine Ag cows. That those 82, we would concede, are the remnants, if you will, of that original Fine Ag herd. We believe, though, that the other evidence is clear. Uncontrovertedly, Mr. McMurtry, who was Mr. Shaw's care person, and Mr. Shaw both testified that the remaining cows that were there in April of 2002 were Mr. Feldman's. Now, conceitedly, the trial court found otherwise.
Okay, and your time has expired. You'll be back for another 10 minutes.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you. All right, Mr. Wilbur, you have 14 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, counsel, my name is Brent Wilbur. I'm an attorney from Pierce, South Dakota, and I'm here representing American Bank and Trust today. First, I would like to just deal with several of the things that Mr. Cross raised and some of the questions that the court had. First of all, I believe that if you look at findings of fact, and I think they're 45, 46, and 47, you'll see that the trial court made findings of fact concerning the livestock and the fact that Mr. Feldman and AgStar were in essence unperfected creditors with regard to this matter, and that deals with the bailment issue.
Well, does that assume then, is the finding then that Feldman's do not own those cattle then? Is that what you're saying?
No, the court found that Scholl had sufficient interests in the cattle such that under 9203 of the Uniform Commercial Code, the bank's security interest could attach to those cattle. I think
all of them, not just his share or his portion of the profit.
I think that's fully consistent with prior decisions of this court. And I think there's one case here that's on all fours with the case that you have today, the only difference being that it dealt with high oleic sunflowers as opposed to cattle. And that is the case of First National Bank of Omaha versus Pleasant Hollow Farms, because the facts are almost exactly the same. In Pleasant Hollow Farms, you had a situation where a person named Horace Satius had a secret ownership agreement claiming to own the growing crops. And First National Bank of Omaha did exactly what American Bank and Trust did in this case. First National Bank of Omaha did a lien search. They took tax returns. They took a financial statement, and they made a loan. When it came time to harvest the crop, Mr. Satius showed up and said, I own the crop. And this court examined an agreement very similar to the Red Cow Agreement. As a matter of fact, it was almost exactly like the Red Cow Agreement, except the farmer in that case, David Zeringer, had fewer rights in the collateral than did Nathan Shaw under this agreement. But otherwise, the agreements are very similar. The secret creditor would advance the costs to put he would advance the capital, essentially, would be repaid interest, and at the end of the agreement would have an interest in the collateral. And this court, looking at those same facts, held that the bank's security interest attached to the entire crop, not just to a portion of it.
But isn't that, that could not be termed a bailment, though, could it?
I don't...
If bailment is an issue, that would be a distinguishing factor to the case that you're just citing.
Well, there are two issues here, Your Honor. Well, for one thing, we think that factually, it's clear that this was not a bailment. The issue is...
Why didn't the court find that to be the case, then?
I think the court specifically found, under the First National Bank of Omaha case, that what the situation was between the creditors, and therefore found that it was not a bailment. I mean, I don't know if the court has to find this is not a bailment. I think the court finds what the facts are, not what they aren't. And we would submit that that was the case here, and that's what the court did.
Mr. Wilbur,
yes.
In this case, however, we've got identifiable cattle. It's kind of hard to identify a sunflower. But
well,
do we even know whether your client looked at the FinAg cattle that were branded and tagged?
I don't think we will ever know exactly what cattle were looked at.
Did they opinion. They knew they were taking FinAg's cattle, though, because of the subrogation?
That's correct. FinAg had a continuing security interest in cows.
I understand all that. Now, did they know the FinAg cattle were identifiable? American.
It is not clear whether all FinAg cattle were identifiable. I think if you look at the trial testimony, Your Honor.
Well, how many of them were? How many? FinAg had over 1,100 cattle.
That's correct.
And according to the facts that I read, they were identifiable by brand or ear tag. FinAg, because FinAg had owned them.
FinAg had owned them, had owned some of them at one time.
All right.
There would have been replacements.
And now, your client, American, took a subrogation on those cattle. How many cattle were there then? How many FinAg cattle went to American?
Well, I don't think the question is how many FinAg cattle, it's how many cattle that were present at the time the cattle were looked at by American Bank and Trust and were represented by Nathan Shaw as being owned by him were still there. I mean, that's one issue. And if you want to get into that, I'd be happy to discuss it because...
Because when I go out and look at those cattle and I've just taken the security interest in FinAg's cattle and none of them have their brand or ear tag, I'm going to be kind of curious.
Well, I would submit that the bank did all they reasonably could under the circumstances. They looked at tax returns that said he owned the cattle, which are submitted under penalty of a federal crime. They looked at financial statements, which are once again subject to penalty under as a federal crime. They inspected, and if you're saying their inspection was inadequate, I think we're injecting something that isn't there into the law. But let's talk about those facts.
I don't know what they inspected. That's my problem. I have no idea what they inspected. They could have done a chance, what's his name, down there and flown them over somebody else's cattle.
Well, I think I've told you. They relied on tax returns that show me all the cattle. They relied on FinAg's inspection 1 month previous. FinAg had inspected in May of 2001. They relied on FinAg's representations that those were their cattle that had been there 1 month previously. There's no evidence that that 1,000 cattle left and another 1,000 came in that 1 month.
So let's say those were FinAg cattle that your client looked at. These are the cattle that I'm taking subrogation to. They looked at them. Those cattle disappeared. He moves Feldman's cattle in to take their place. Now your banker owns them, right? Because they're on the same grass.
Well, actually,
that's what you're telling me.
No, I don't think so. Because a lot of those cattle were shown at the trial to be present, and there were findings of fact issued on them that were present at the time the bank examined them. The bulk of the cattle were subject to another unfiled agreement between a guy named Ron Jennings from Highmore and Nathan Shaw. Those cattle, 625 of them, and there were 901 left, were subject to that contract. They were there, and there was testimony that they were there at the time the bank examined them. The bank didn't just take a subordination of whatever FinAg had. They took a first perfected security interest in all cows owned by Nathan Shaw. So they looked at those 625 cows. And now the claim is from Mr. Feldman and Agstar that somehow those cows became Feldman's when he carried out the purchase agreement after the bank had looked at them. But we would suggest that under the law in South Dakota, those cattle, having been examined by FinAg, having been examined by FinAg and American Bank and Trust, became the bank's collateral because Shaw had sufficient interest in them to allow that security interest to attach. If you look at the Red Cow Agreement,
you conceding that 615 of the 901 cattle were the Jennings cattle?
Well, there were, it's not, we will never sort out exactly what cattle were still there. But it's clear that there's a contract for 625 Jennings cattle. The testimony was that those cattle were in place at the time that the bank examined the collateral, along with another 150 cattle subject to the Sampson contract, both of which are attached to our brief in the appendix. And so many of those cattle...
Well, I understood that Feldman didn't purchase those cattle until December 15th of 2001.
But if you look at
the inspection was in April of 2001, was it not?
Actually, there were two inspections. In April were made by FinAg, and then I think June 5th by American Bank and Trust. But at that time, the testimony was, and the findings of fact are, that the Jennings cattle were all in Shaw's possession at that point in time. They were already there. Apparently, the purchase was carried out, that Feldman delivered a check to Jennings after that, but all those cattle are sitting there, just like all the Sampson cattle are there.
Would you address the issue about the if we rule as you are suggesting, what does this do to the arrangements that people have with feeder or putting cattle with an arrangement such as Feldman and Shaw had?
Oh,
but how does this change? Because all over South Dakota, this kind of arrangement is done without filing statements or UCC under the UCC. So how is this going to change, and how does this change the complexion of our law?
Well, I don't believe it does at all, Your Honor. In this case, and looking at the facts of this case, Feldman had filed UCC-1s before when he put cattle with different people. AgStar knew about this arrangement and should have filed a financing statement and was supposed to file a financing statement and didn't. So I don't think it changes the relationship at all. We don't have a true bailment. The law, essentially, the law has not changed in South Dakota for an extended period of time, and a lot of cases have addressed these issues where cattle are put in somebody else's.
Okay, so if it's a bailment, then you're saying because it's not a bailment,
Your Honor, I believe that under
it needs to be a financial statement or a finance statement filed. Is that correct?
My clients file a financial statement regardless of what relationship it is, and I've advised a number of lending institutions to require their borrowers to do the same.
Okay, but even if it's a bailment, do you need to do it? I guess that's the question.
I believe if it's a bailment, estoppel still applies under the line of cases that we cited in our brief. If you allow somebody else to have those cattle and to look like their cattle and to represent to a bank that their cattle and you do nothing to protect yourself, then even if it's a bailment, we would suggest that the law is on all fours to the effect that you can be estopped from denying that those are your cattle. The Temple case would be an example. There's a solid line of cases decided by this court that's clearly on point. And I think anybody who places cattle with somebody else for an extended period of time, even if it's a bailment, is at risk. But in this case, we would submit that if you read the Bread Cowell agreement, it's pretty hard to say this is a bailment. It says at the end, this agreement will be settled by December 15, 2002 with profits or losses split equally between the parties. That's not a bailment, because if you have a bailment, you have no interest in what you're holding for the bailor. And I think that's black letter law. In this case, Nathan Shaw was inevitably going to either profit from those cattle or bear a loss and have to pay money. And he had possession, as his hired man said at trial, and as the court found, it was Nathan Shaw who called the shots with regard to those cattle, not Bill Feldman. Nathan decided where they'd be put, whether there'd be a veterinary used, you know, all the decisions surrounding those cattle. There was no way that American Bank and Trust could have found out about Bill Feldman or about AgStar, both of whom had the opportunity and knew they should have filed a financing statement and didn't. And we would submit that creates estoppel in and of itself. I don't think there's anything more that American Bank and Trust could reasonably have done.
Well, shouldn't they have been on notice a little bit? I mean, here's this guy getting a $750,000 loan for overdraft checks that it did. I mean, where are these cattle? Where's the bank think these cattle are coming from? They're taking over the loan from FinAg. Well, they think he inherited these cattle, or where do they think they came from?
Well, they think FinAg had an interest in these cattle for years, Your Honor. It's the bank did what they were supposed to do. They did a lien search. They found liens of record. Some of them filed by, as an example, Mr. Sampson, who had a contract for sale.
Fine for cattle that Shaw owns, or has bought them, but we're talking about
cattle that Feldman bought, that cattle that he shipped down here to have fed or to have bred for calves.
Some of them, as I say, a good many of those cattle were already present, were already at Shaw's place. You know, you've got the Sampson cattle, you've got the Jennings cattle. But in any event, I mean, it was, the bank did everything they could do. And I don't know what else you would ask a lender to do.
Couldn't they have required that he keep some kind of an inventory and look at the inventory of the cattle to see how they matched up and where they came from? I mean, is that so hard to do?
Well, perhaps they could have done that, but I don't think that that is standard banking practice. And the trial court found, as a finding of fact, that American Bank and Trust did everything they reasonably could do with regard to determining those cattle were Shaw's before they placed the loan.
Who prepared the findings and conclusions for the trial court? Who prepared the findings and conclusions for the trial court?
We submitted them, Your Honor.
Okay.
The court signed them.
Understand.
Okay. But I think that the findings of fact deal with the factual issues in this case. I think I have 8 seconds left, which I'll waive to Mr. Nash. Thank you.
Did the trial court or the Bank American, did they ever determine, for example, the age of the cattle or the breed of the cattle, any kind of descriptions? Did they ever have any of that, like black baldies, or do we even know? Or we just know them as a cow?
Cows are cows, and I don't think that, especially east of the river where there's no brand law, you can require the bank to do more. Remember, these cattle had been inspected by FINAG, by the FINAG loan officer, who had been looking at those cattle for 4 years, and they'd been inspected 1 month prior to the time that this loan was made.
Okay, any further questions for Mr. Rover from the bench? If not, thank you. Mr. Nash, you have 6 minutes, sir.
May it please the court, my name is Bob Nash and I represent FINAG. I think a point that was just raised here, cows are mostly fungible. Cows, black cows look like black cows. If you don't have a brand, you can't tell one cow from another cow. So I mean, it's important, and you have to get to the difference between west of the Missouri River and east of the Missouri River. Typically, east of the Missouri River, cattle are feedlotted. And they're fed in confined areas, whereas West River, they may tend to range. Now, that's not totally true because a number of these cows were placed at the Cowan place where they ranged all over. So, I mean, it's important that you don't have any way to identify those cattle. And if you put 900 black cows in a pasture, they'd look just like 900 cows down the road. And it's really a tough deal. It's something that this situation probably might not have been prevented by having the state be an entire brand law state, but it would have made it a little tougher on that. The real question, and I think the Temple case, Your Honors, had pointed out in one of the early part of the case there that First National Bank perfected a security interest in all cattle branded with the Temple brand, their products proceeds after determining that no other security interests appeared of record to suggest any prior lien. That, I think, is the key to this whole case. If a lender makes a loan without checking the records first, then they put themselves and their customer at risk. The court went on in that Temple case, and it's probably directly on point with this one, to say essentially, a security interest does not attach to the described asset. It attaches to the debtor's right in the asset. And I think that's just, to this case, it's exactly on the point. AgStar got the required information from Mr. Feldman about Nathan Shaw. Got his name, got his social security number, got all of that stuff. And what happened is, between the getting of the information and the processing through two or three people, they forgot to file their UCCs here. The cattle that were out there, Mr. Sampson apparently did file and perfected his security interest in the cattle that he sold to Nathan Shaw. Similarly, Jennings did not perfect. They were lucky. They got paid. There's a lot of people who didn't get paid. My client's out $2 million. But How do you stop these kind of wrecks from happening is one consideration. The Feldmans allowed Nathan Shaw complete, not ownership, but complete control over these cattle that were, some of them were placed here, and some of them were already there. And anyway, what happens is Nathan goes out, pays for the vet care, pays for the vet feed, or for the feed. Nathan pays the people who take care of the cattle. These cattle are located on ground that Nathan Shaw leases. Nathan Shaw can cull the cattle. He has every bit as much rights in these cattle as Mr. Temple did. The only difference we've got is there's no brand laws east of the Missouri River, so we don't run into that. The estoppel argument applies against the Feldmans and AgStar because they didn't avail themselves of the laws. And we're not to July 1st of 2001. They just didn't, they didn't get it done when they started with this arrangement with Shaw in 2000. So, I mean, they missed the boat on that. And it's a question, is it something that a prudent lender would do? And the prudent lender has to do the lien check. If they don't do that, they put themselves and their customer at risk. These cattle, and one thing I guess that I would point out, these cattle start out as fine ag cattle, and they may have gotten old and been culled and other cattle have been added in here, but in fact, these cattle were subject to fine ag's perfected first security interest, which fine ag then subordinated to American Bank and Trust when American Bank financed the cows. And so those cattle were perfected all of the time. If they're secured initially, that security interest continues, and that follows from 9320, 9322, 9324, and 9325. Nobody can get in ahead of them. That security interest stays in those cattle, period.
Now, which cattle are you talking about, actually?
The cattle that Nathan Shaw had here in South Dakota.
And including the Feldman cattle, is that what you're talking about?
Yes, because the Feldmans, if in fact those cattle were some that the Feldmans bought in Minnesota and brought in, they let Nathan Shaw appear to be the owner. They let Nathan Shaw appear to be the one who made every decision with relation to those cattle. So that is really the key. Mr. Cross mentioned that the debtor can only give what he has, and I remember Professor Earl Mulvich saying, nemo dat, you can only give what you have. If there was a search done, they found it. And I think that's all the time I have. Thank you,
Mr. Nash.
I've got a question, if I can.
Sure.
When Finn Ag transferred those cattle, when they went out and looked at those cattle, were those cattle identifiable with Finn Ag's brand and earmarks?
Some of them had the brands on them, some of them didn't.
How many or some?
About 100 head, approximately between ear tags and brands. I think it was either 89 or 115, somewhere in there, that had those. But there's no way of knowing that unless you run them through a gate. And you can't do that in June because cattle are out in a pasture on grass, and I believe these were out of Collins. You know, Feldman's told one of the people that took care of the cattle that they claimed an ownership interest in those cattle. The other three or four people who took care of those cattle had no clue.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah,
thank you, Mr. Nash. All right. Mr. Cross, you have 10 minutes, sir.
Thank you, Your Honor. I'd like to address the last point, the last question. I'm not sure if Mr. Nash misspoke, but the 89 to 100 fine ag brands or ear tags are on what was left in April of 2002. They have to be clear about this. What Fine Ag's officer Rob Quisell testified about was that from the time that the value-added program was there, they would all have brands or ear tags. That policy continued as long as Fine Ag had an interest in those cows. In other words, he testified that when I went out in August of 2004, any of the Feldman cattle arrived, all of them would have had Fine Ag. I knew what they were. And oh, by the way, those were all the same cows that were still out there in April of 2002. He made that claim. Now, we know that's not true. It's abundantly clear that over 1,536 head of cows were delivered between August of 2000 and April of 2002. And yet, Mr. Quisell, on behalf of Fine Ag, claimed all of the cows in April of 2002 were the same cows that were there in August of 2000. And he said, most importantly, every Fine Egg cow from that herd would have had a Fine Egg identifying mark, be it an ear tag, a brand, or both.
Was Fine Egg buying mixed cattle? Were they buying Hereford, black, white face, this type? Was it a mix and match?
I believe that's true, Your Honor. I don't recall specifically from the record. But and again, we get back to this issue that the bank continues to claim we did everything we could. The bank did little to nothing. The bank went out in June of 2001. They called Fine Egg and said, by the way, how many cattle do you have with Bath and Shaw? And Fine Egg said, well, we've got about 1,100. So they drove out with Nathan Shaw. We don't, as counsel candidly admitted, they don't know where they went. They admitted, we don't know where we went. We don't. We have some jottings in our inspection notes, but the inspection notes simply say at one lot, 600, and another, 400.
They said they looked at the tax returns, and
they
that indicated.
That's correct, Your Honor, but what we're talking about here is two issues. First of all, are the cows that were left in April of 2002 the Fine Egg herd? And the only evidence is that of the Fine Egg herd, there are 82 that have a Fine Egg ear tag and maybe 100 or so that have either a brand or a tag or both. The second issue is, how is that an estoppel of Mr. Feldman? I mean, in other words, if Mr. Feldman is the owner, if he is the bailor, how does what Mr. Shaw is doing, because we all admit that we're short about 1,600 head of cows. If you take all of the cows that should have been out there from Mr. Feldman, take all of the cows that should have been there from the Fine Egg herd, you should have had about 2,600, and we only had 910. So it's clear that Mr. Shaw was doing something with those other cows. And the point is that is not an estoppel of the Feldman brothers. The law does not require a bailor to file these UCC custodial statements. The policy should be that the law and the policy that has been followed in the state and the practice. Mr. Wilbur said, well, how can the bank be expected to do this? This isn't the customary practice of the banking industry to actually verify what the collateral is and to keep up on top of it and make sure that it is what it is. I would suggest that is, in fact, the policy. Cattlemen's Association and their amicus point out that this suggested practice of filing custodial statements is not only not required by the law, but it is not the practice of cattlemen that are doing business in the state of South Dakota, be they from South Dakota itself or from other states. The Ron Jennings cows that he refers to were subject to a written lease agreement. They had the Jennings brand on them. Mr. Jennings placed 625 head of cows with Mr. Shaw in March of 2001. Now, Mr. Quissell, the Fine Egg representative, said, well, when I came out there in May of 2001, I saw all the same cows that I had seen out there in August of 2000. He didn't identify or try to identify or know of the fact that 625 new head had shown up. In point of fact, many more had shown up because Mr. Feldman had made deliveries out to that site previous to that in December of 2000. This bred cow agreement, Your Honor, does create a true bailment situation. We believe that the profit sharing arrangement, it has been recognized. It was recognized by the Eighth Circuit in a case that was expressly cited with approval by this court in the Wobener case that said simply because you have a share arrangement, that might give Mr. Shaw some interest in those cows. But that some interest, you cannot convert the some interest into an ability to have a 100% security interest. Whatever limited extent that Mr. Shaw may have had, and we believe on the facts of this case, given the fact that Mr. Feldman would not recover back his purchase price and the feed costs, that interest is zero.
In Roemeter, were they affirming the trial court's findings that a bailment existed?
In Roemeter?
Yeah.
No, Your Honor. In Roemeter, district court had entered a directed verdict finding as a matter of law that under the control and apparent ownership issue, the creditor, if you will, was entitled to summary judge or a directed verdict, technically. And the Eighth Circuit said, no, we believe that the facts are sufficient to at least create a material issue of fact on the issue of bailment.
So a total different standard of review than we've got here, where we've got three findings of fact basically going against the bailment argument.
But the findings of fact do not specifically address the issue of bailment because, and I think Mr. Wilbur was correct, because in the trial court's mind, the issue was irrelevant. Because in the trial court's mind, if you place cows in possession of a third party without filing a custodial financing statement, you're out of luck. You're done. And if that's the case, then the whole issue of whether or not a bailment vests sufficient rights in the debtor such that he can attach a security interest on it is moot. Because how can you have a situation where the bailment does not create sufficient rights in the debtor unless you file your custodial financing statement? You are judicially amending 9505, which does not require a security interest or a financing statement to be filed. I believe the strong policy implications here, Your Honor, is that when we look at what the parties did or should have done, it's easy to say Feldman Brothers could have filed a custodial financing statement. But it's more fundamental to say, bank, you should actually make sure that the collateral that's being offered to you is actually owned by or has, or that the debtor has an interest in that collateral in the first instance. We all agree that everyone here has had a loss. But at the end of the day, Mr. Feldman and the Feldman brothers simply did what custom care feeders have done in this state for well over 100 years, and that is customary and practicable. And it is simple for the bank to simply verify the interest that the debtor has in the collateral. Thank you very much, Your Honor.
And thank you, Mr. Cross. The court will be in recess for 10 minutes.